are encouraging you to get in touch with us and let us know what's happening in your area. And many of you have. I've got a half a dozen emails here that I want to work my way through. But we heard from one brave soul who decided to put his voice on the air. And we're going to listen to what Dan Dix has to tell us about life in Bacchus.
Yeah, hello, KXE. This is Daniel Dix, Bacchus, Minnesota. I have a fun genealogical observation. I was just last weekend, I was down visiting Ham Lake, Minnesota, which is, I don't know, about maybe 20 miles out of Minneapolis, north of Minneapolis. And in my brother's housing development, kind of an upscale suburban development, walking down the middle of the street was two Sandhill Crane adults with a little baby walking right between them. And the little baby wasn't that little. He must have been 16 inches tall, I guess. But they were just walking down the street like they owned the place. And that's, I got to say that, excuse me, one thing, because 20 years ago or so, I mean, to see a Sandhill Crane for me was just a real rare event. And now it's like, wow, just walking down the street in town? Anyhow, I guess that's a good sign, right?
Yeah,
thanks, KXE, for being there, and enjoy listening to all the nature observations that I hear about on your station. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thank you, Daniel. Nice to hear from you. And what I tell you, anytime you get to see a couple of Sandhill Cranes and their colt, it is just a fantastic event. I live on a long dirt road, and there's fields on both sides. And in the past, though not this year, but in the past, we have had the parents come out with their young colts and walk around in the fields. And it is a thrill. Believe me, I am with you all the way. But to see one in Ham Lake, wow, that really does push the limits. We had quite a few emails this past week about turtles, and I wanted to cover a couple of things. First of all, this one from Greg. Greg says, long-time listener, new sustaining member, and thank you. Thank you, Greg, for becoming a sustaining member. And if you're a member of KAXE and you haven't explored the idea of becoming a sustaining member, then you should call after 8 this morning. Give us a call, and we will put you in touch with the right people, and you can become a sustaining member, too. But thank you, Greg. Greg goes on to say, I'm not sure whether you're willing to answer questions like this from listeners. If not, I'll keep investigating. No worries. That's a pretty nice, gentle start. I love answering questions. And sometimes I have to say, I don't know. And in this case, I have a pretty good idea. Unfortunately, I did not write down the exact date I witnessed two baby turtles emerging from their nest near our cabin on the Mississippi River. I would estimate around mid-May. I highly doubt the mother laid them in mid-March or so, as the ground was still likely frozen or at least very cold. Is it possible the eggs were laid last autumn, or was it early spring? Maybe this has been covered in one of your kids' programs earlier, and you can just point me to a link or something. Thanks, and I'll try to do a better job of documenting my future observations. Greg, I think you've got it pretty well covered there. What happens with the baby turtles is that the eggs are laid this time of year, so those turtles you're seeing out there now are laying eggs. And if you follow what should happen, it takes from 72 to about 80 days. So sort of the end of August is when you're going to see these eggs hatching, when they would normally hatch. And at that point, some of those turtles will come out of the nest and will find their way to a lake or the belly of some beast. But at any rate, they'll hatch and emerge. But some of the eggs that are laid in June will overwinter, and those turtles will emerge in May of the following year. And that, even though the little turtle, now remember the mother who laid those eggs was able to dig a little vase shaped hole in the ground and put her 8 to maybe 20 eggs in there, and it normally, you know, they would be coming out, but that's only, I mean, she can't reach more than about 6 inches down. So oftentimes those spots completely freeze, and those turtles completely freeze. But they have evolved in ways that allow them to shrug off this freezing and still emerge as wild and viable turtles. So, Greg, that's kind of what's happening. And for all of the others of you who sent questions about turtles, yeah, it takes a while, like 80 days for those eggs to hatch. So if they laid eggs in your yard, and you've got a while to wait on those, well, you're going to be you're going to have. I like to put a little cage around the spots where I see them laying eggs so that they have a better chance of survival, because everybody likes turtle eggs. Maybe you haven't tried them yet, but everybody else has, and they really like them. Dave Larson sent along a note. How long is the gestation period for turtles? We covered that. Jeff Edmund sent along. Hi, John. We've had a great crested flycatcher hanging around here east end of Turtle River Lake, just northeast of Bemidji, for a while this summer, but I finally got a good look at it a few days ago. I had no idea what it was, but it appeared to be Phoebe-shaped, so I thought it might be a flycatcher, and sure enough, glad to hear you and Harry talking about it this morning. Thanks. And hi, John. We live on North Star Lake in Marcel and are hoping you can identify this tree or shrub about 6 feet tall, found this week growing on our property, as well as a visitor we had in the yard yesterday. And so Pat asks, what sort of plant was it? And it was a fly honeysuckle, and it was easy to determine because in the case of the fly honeysuckle, the berries are now getting bright red and ripe. And they're always two, and they sort of arrange themselves like the wings on a fly. So fly honeysuckle there. And then from our good friend up in Bedette, Jeff Burcham says, sent me a picture of a great cluster of the showy lady slippers. And he said, this is the same spot as the ram's heads and calypsos. And that's pretty astonishing. And he said there have to be about 500 showies. And he mentioned, too, that piping plover is sitting on 4 eggs on Lake of the Woods. So lots of things going on up there. That's all we have time for this morning. But trust me, there's more. And we'll talk about it during the phenology show. You know, just before we start, this email just came in. And, of course, it lit me right up because I have been talking on air over the years of an incident that took place probably back in the mid-80s where I was visiting a woman on the mail route and we were having coffee in her living room, and right outside her door was a little pond that was kind of associated with Deer Lake, and there was a great blue heron standing there along the edge of the pond, and about 3 feet from it was a tree, and in the tree was a red squirrel, and the red squirrel kept coming down the tree a little closer to the heron, a little closer, and barking at it and carrying on the way squirrels do. And finally it crossed the line, and the heron, quick as a snake, turned and stabbed that squirrel and threw it in the lake and washed it a little bit and swallowed it whole. Well, lo and behold, from Lynn Hanska, who lives in Baxter, she said, good morning. Thought you might be interested to see this video I took in my backyard of a great blue heron last Friday. This was the fourth chipmunk in about 25 minutes. He has been back every day since, and we've seen him catch and consume 12 far. Once he gets one, he walks quickly down to the lake, shaking it the whole time, then dunks it in the lake and swallows it in one gulp. Have a great day. Love your show. You just made my day, Lynn. I honestly, until this moment, I thought that perhaps I was the only one who'd ever seen a heron eat a squirrel or a squirrel relative, in this case, chipmunks. But 12? I'd pay to have that heron.
No kidding.
I would hire that heron and put it in my yard, and I would give it whatever it wanted besides all the chipmunks it could eat. Oh my goodness.
I think I love the best is the dunking it in the lake, like cleaning it off so it tastes a little better.
Well, and I think it's a little slipperier when it's wet.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my word. Yeah, watching that squirrel go down that heron's neck was all I wanted to see. And then I thought, well, what if it caught a sunfish that was, you know, 3 inches deep or something like that? It would have to swallow that too. So apparently their throat is quite elastic. Lynn, thank you so much. It's time for the Phenology Show. It is time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And this morning, we're going to lead off the show. We led off with that great story about the blue heron and the chipmunks. Oh, my. Anyway, Ed Dallas from Deerwood called this morning and said that he has found the first tiny monarch caterpillars on his milkweed plants, and that the common milkweed was just about to begin blooming in the Deerwood area. And his counterpart, Dallas Hudson, well, it's hard to keep Ed Dallas and Dallas Hudson apart, but Dallas Hudson over in Akeley told me that the common milkweed was in bloom over at his house. And I have not seen common milkweed in flower yet, but the common milkweed and the swamp milkweed in my neighborhood are both budded, and there will be flowers very soon. So we've been watching those. And if it's flowers you're after, Harvey Jader sent me a list of flowers that he had been seeing around the eastern part of the, or the western part of the listening area, and it was quite a complete list. Cow parsnip, Queen Anne's lace, veiny pea, northern blue flag, red raspberry, three-leaf false Solomon seal, stemless lady slipper, small cranberries, fruit on the fly honeysuckle, American vetch, snowberry, twin flowers, showy lady slippers, bunch berries, rough bed straw, pink shin leaf. My sister sent me a great picture of pink shin leaf. Pink shin leaf is another name for pink pyrola, and it is a lovely plant. Definitely pink. The flowers all face the ground. There might be 10 or 12 flowers on a stalk, and they are all downward facing. So if you are out wandering around and you find the pink shin leaf, you're going to be really happy because it is a lovely, lovely flower. He also mentioned Philadelphia fleabane, wild calla. I mentioned twin flower, Labrador bedstraw, balsam ragwort. Oh, just lots of flowers. And to that, I would add my own list, which is only half a page long. The maiden pink, which is a very bright five-petaled pink flower. If you come across maiden pink, you're going to know that you're looking at a pink flower. It is bright, bright, bright pink. Blue-eyed grass, which my neighbor Marvin Beers came across and sort of pointed out to me. And my note, spreading dogbane, those 3 to 4 foot high plants with little white flowers that are streaked in pink, probably approaching its first peak of bloom. Blue bead lily and wild sarsaparilla, both of those are past their flowering stage and have gotten to the seed stage. And a few weeks ago, Joel Rosen mentioned in an email to me that he had seen perhaps 1 in 100 of the sarsaparilla around his house actually had flowers and now fruits. I thought, well, that's interesting. So I kind of checked around my place, and I came to just a, I mean, I didn't lay out a plot and go through it and count all the plants, but I just started looking and I started counting, you know, okay, there's 1, 2, 3, 7, 8. Oh, there's one with flowers, 11, 12, 13, 14. I ended up somewhere in the neighborhood of about one plant in 25. So the more than Joel was estimating, but but fewer than Dallas Hudson estimated over in his area, where he said it might be as high as 1 in 2 that have flowers on them. But he promised that he would go out and check that for me, and we'll find out more about that as well. And that's the wild sarsaparilla. That and the bunch, or not bunchberry, the bluebead lily are pretty much done flowering, and now it's just fruit set there that you can check out. Tufted loosestrife, if you're out near the water's edge and you're looking at all of the beautiful blue iris, blue flag, they're called wild iris. They are probably at their peak of bloom right now. Next to them, you may find these fuzzy little explosions of yellow on these small plants. The plants seldom get more than about 18 inches tall, but the flowers are these little explosions of yellow, and that is tufted loosestrife. Sometimes we hear of purple loosestrife as being an invasive plant and one that can overtake a wetlands, and purple loosestrife can do that, and it is an invasive and it is an introduced plant. But tufted loosestrife and fringed loosestrife are native loosestrifes, and they aren't nearly as aggressive in taking over areas. Yarrow is probably starting to approach its peak of flowering. The big discs has got a kind of a pale bluish green leaf that looks very fern-like, very, very, very fine leaves, and these big discs of white flowers at the top. And that is yarrow, and it is kind of coming up on its peak of bloom. Common fleabane. Last week I had daisy fleabane. This week, common fleabane. There's one more fleabane called Philadelphia fleabane. They all grow here in northern Minnesota, and you can check out all of them by just getting outside. And the fleabanes are like a little aster, maybe an inch across, and they have more than 50 rays. So when you think of an aster, you're thinking of like a daisy. A daisy has a center flower and then rays around the edge. In the case of the fleabane, you have the center flower, and instead of 10 or 12 rays, you have 50. So they're very, very fine rays that surround the flower of the fleabane, so you can find those pretty easily. They're quite common. Bunchberry is probably at the end of its bloom. I saw a lot of them yesterday, but they are mostly, you can look at the flower parts and see that they're mostly done flowering for the year. The big white bracts that attract insects to the flower, which is in the center, those are still prominent, but definitely on their way out. The cattails are releasing pollen right now. So if you live near a lake or a wetland and you have cattails, there are two types. There is the common cattail, which is native to this area, and there's an introduced cattail called, I believe, the thin-leafed cattail. And the difference between the two is easily noticed now when the female and male flowers are together on the same stalk. Because what you get is the female flower down below. That's that familiar cat's tail, the big, round, dark brown flower head. Above that, you get this sort of messy-looking, yellowish-green conglomeration, which is the male part of the flower. And if there's a gap between those two, if when you look at that male flower standing above the female flower, if there's a gap in there, that is the invasive thin-leafed species of cattail. You want to have cattail, you want to have the female flower and the male flower right together, so that when the female flower stops, the male flower begins. And if you see that, then you know that you're dealing with the regular cattails. And if you're in the area where the tufted loosestrife and the cattails are growing, you should also be watching for a plant called meadowsweet. And Meadowsweet is budded right now in the Grand Rapids area. So west of here and south of here, it could be in flower. It gets these cones of white flowers with little pink centers that are quite beautiful and quite numerous. And the plant itself has a sort of a woody stem. It's high in salicylic acid, so it's a good pain reliever. If you're out in the woods and you need a little bit of pain relief, you could chew on a leaf or gnaw on some of the bark. It might save you a couple of aspirin when you get home. Bush honeysuckle, opposite leafed, twin yellow flowers, definitely in bloom right now at my house. Another yellow flower that's in bloom is yellow sweet clover. These plants grow along the edges of roads. There is the yellow sweet clover and the white sweet clover, and obviously the differences in the color. But they are very similar, tall plants. They don't look at all like any clover you've ever seen. But they have these, they can be 4 or 5 feet tall, and they have these long shoots that have the flowers on them. And you'll see lots and lots and lots of little yellow flowers or lots and lots and lots of little white flowers on these tall plants along the edges of roads. And those are yellow and white sweet clover. Another, I don't know, kind of a confusing plant in the sense that it is, it's black bindweed, and it is not black. It's the stems are quite red and the flowers are quite white, but the flowers are very, very small, and clusters of these tiny, tiny flowers, like matchhead sized flowers. And this plant, bindweed, it grows around and or through and just knots up everything. So that's bindweed. Also blooming hedge bindweed. And I saw a picture on Season Watch today of someone who thought that they had morning glory. And if you get this trumpet, the bindweed flower, not the black bindweed, the black bindweed is like these little dots of white, but the hedge bindweed is that big flower that when you see it, you're going to say, oh, look, a morning glory. It's a big trumpet-shaped white or pink flower, and it can be 3 inches across and maybe 2 inches deep. It's a big, big flower on the hedge bindweed. Bindweed is often confused with morning glory. The difference is the morning glory has a heart-shaped leaf. Think of a Valentine heart, not the heart that's beating inside your chest right now. But the Valentine heart, that's the shape of the morning glory leaf. The bindweed leaves are not heart-shaped. They're some are shaped like a halberd. Some are arrowhead-shaped. They are not heart-shaped. So look at the leaf. If it's heart-shaped, then you probably have morning glory. But you should know that morning glory typically blooms a little bit later in the season. Bindweeds bloom first. Thimbleberry, if you're over in the east along the shores of Lake Superior, you probably are very familiar with thimbleberry. That's not as common in this area. Has a big leaf like a maple, big lobed leaf. Look at your hand. The leaf is going to be at least that big. It has 5-petaled white flowers that might be an inch to an inch and a half across. And it is that familiar sort of raspberry-like plant that grows on especially along the shore of Lake Superior. If you have walked the Lake Superior Trail, you have walked by lots of thimbleberry. Curled dock is also sending up flowers. And by the way, many of these notes, just checking their timing, we're within 2 to 3 days of average. So it might be a day or two early, it might be a day or two late, but basically it is, we're right on average for this time of year. If you're looking at shrubs, the roundleaf dogwood is blooming. And over in the west, my friend Dallas Hudson tells me that the gray dogwood is blooming over there. And then a quick rundown of some other things. Pearly-eyed butterflies, silver-bordered fritillaries, meadow fritillaries, Milbert's tortoise shells, white admirals. Those are the butterflies I've seen this past week. Damselflies, the elegant spread wing and the ebony jewel wing are damselflies that are out flying around. Now, if you're not familiar with the two, dragonfly wings stick out perpendicular to the body, so the axis of the abdomen on a dragonfly, the wings are going to be at 90 degrees to that, and on a damselfly, this is at rest when they're sitting, not flying. When a damselfly is sitting, its wings are going to be parallel to its abdomen. So that's if the wings are parallel to the abdomen, it's a damselfly. If they're perpendicular to the abdomen, it's a dragonfly. And I won't go into the numbers of dragonflies I've seen this week, but there are some fabulous dragonflies out there flying around right now. And for kids and kid-like people who are my age, the spittlebugs are out. And what could be more fun than picking a gob of spit off of a plant stem and sort of mushing it around in your fingers until you expose the little critter that made it? And they do this as a matter of protection. And as you walk around in the woods, you're going to see these little gobs of spit on plant stems. And really, it's only the plant's juices that have been run through this bug and aerosolized or inflated with air. The little bug climbs up the plant, orients itself with its head down and its abdomen up, and then as it draws plant juices from the plant, it wiggles its tail rapidly back and forth, and moving this fluid from the plant through the bug and out of its anus, it creates this little cloud of spit. And those are spittlebugs. So don't be afraid. None of that is toxic. And I have it on good authority that the spittlebugs do not eat non-modified GMO plants, so that it's all organic. Trust me. Finally, and I would say, gosh, well, two notes about birds. One, a lot of people are wondering where their hummingbirds are at. And the reason that they're not coming to the feeder every few minutes as they were a week or two ago is that they are feeding their young. And in order to feed their young, they need to supply them with protein. And so they're catching insects and bringing them to the nest to feed the young. And then they show up at your feeder briefly to get enough sustenance to go out and catch more insects to bring to their young. So that's why the hummingbirds aren't hanging around your feeder in the same numbers that they were. But trust me, in another 3 to 6 weeks, they're going to be just thick, and you'll be going through a quart of sugar a day or a quart of sugar water a day. And finally, whew, thought I'd never get there. The trumpeter swans in my lake, the pair that have been on my lake all spring and have been hidden for the last couple of weeks. Yesterday they showed up and they had 4 cygnets, and I couldn't be happier. I feel like a proud grandfather. So I'm waiting to see how many of those lucky little cygnets make it through and end up as adult swans. It's pretty exciting. That's the Phenology Show for this week. As always, if you have questions, comments, or observations to share, please get in touch with us.